Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome, welcome, one and all. Here it is, the 23rd day of September 2014. This program is live. Of course it's live. We don't do canned stuff around here. The initial run-through is live, and, well, we are or we aren't, depending on whether you listen live or in podcast. Either way is fine. I hope you enjoy it. We all do. And we'll be looking to hear from you one way or the other. This is Titanic Tuesday on the horn. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you go to find the Listen Live button and the pop-out player. If, of course, you're on some sort of iThis or Android Smart That or whatnot, we recommend the apps from Stitcher and TuneIn and uTunes, with the reminder that with those first two, if you happen to see some sort of advertisement, one, you can get away from it by buying the paid version of the app. But two, please remember that if you see it advertising, it is in no way, pick one, anything that goes to support the ongoing broadcast efforts of the Horn. We get no revenue from either of those services. That's not being bitchy. I just want to make it clear that we're not getting advertising money from ExxonMobil or Shell or Amalgamated Poisonous Chemical Industries of America or, you know, whoever happens to be running ads up there. For all I know, they've got Friends of Coal ads on it. So as long as we're clear. No, this is entirely, as you know, this is entirely a listener-supported effort, and we are we have been that way for a lot of years now. We're coming up on our 9th online-only anniversary, and we've already passed our 10th anniversary. And it happens from month to month, hanging on by a thread, because of you. Purely and simply, because of you. We try to raise $150 every evening. That's our goal this evening, $150. To meet monthly expenses, 15 folks at 10, 10 at 15, 2 at 75, 6 at 25, and on and on and on. And hopefully we'll get that done sooner rather than later. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com, and so too is the traditional mail address. If you prefer to operate that way, send me a note, and I'll tell Boss Man Wayne he doesn't have to use the spider-proof gloves when he reaches into the Horn mailbox. Nice crowd gathering in the Horn chat room. As you know, that's where the full-on multimedia real-time madcap experience happens every evening. It's free. It's easy to get into, and I encourage you. If you've never been there, pop right in. If you have been there, come on over. If you haven't been in a while, just wander over and see who's around. Good evening, Jeremy. Good evening, M. Brandt and Paul and Texas T and Tim from L.A. and Waggy and Will in Chicago. Good evening to our longtime veteran indefatigable moderators, Lottie and Sparky. Well, I'm sure we will have a lovely time in the chat room this evening. I want to throw something. I've been doing a little bit of research today. And I want to throw something your way for your consideration, because I don't just do stuff here. But as you know, a while back, oh, okay. Thank you for the correction there, Jeremy. A note coming from Jeremy. One, loud and clear on TuneIn. Second, minor correction, getting the paid version of the TuneIn app does not stop the ads. It just makes it possible to set up recordings and record live programs until your memory runs out. I forgot what I was recording. My memory ran out. No, sorry, it's not like that. Thanks, Jeremy. So you're gonna get the ads for the Amalgamated Chemical Poisoners Association of America, whether you like it or not, by God. Somebody's gotta pay the hangar rent for the Gulfstream 5 over there at TuneIn. Right? We know how that is. You know, maintenance on a Maybach is a booger. No, and thanks to Tim from L.A., by the way, and Sal yesterday evening for helping us to reach the fundraising goal alongside Asa. Thank you very kindly. It was Roger and Asa and Sal and Tim who helped us reach our goal yesterday evening. Now, the research, Tim put in the chat room the picture of the hockey puck and the duct tape. Research? Should we bring up? No. This is a technical thing. And I want you guys' input. And here's how it plays out. You may recall that the incompetence, the rolling merry corporate dung wagon of incompetence that is Shentel Cable, they fried our $4,500 telephone processor box. A few months back, and I have found a workaround. It's not six lines, it's one, but it would be one telephone line coming in for traditional telephony, which would make it possible for somebody to be, say, on the phone at the same time we're running the Horn Malloy Skype chat group on Friday, that kind of thing. And we've got a number we can associate, but there's a gizmo involved. So I want your thoughts. It's about $600, and it will enable us to have traditional telephony as well as the Skype-based telephony that we're dealing with now, which would make things a little bit, well, it would broaden things a little bit. So your thoughts as to whether or not to pursue this here gizmo, and I welcome them. Welcome them all. That's just something I figured out earlier today. So that. Now, thanks very much. Thank you, Glenn. Glenn has gotten us started on the evening's fundraising. That is very important. And we do appreciate it. Glenn is a stalwart. And so now we've only got $140 to go in fundraising this evening. It is deeply appreciated, Glenn. Thank you very, very kindly. Question from Devin, more technical. Devin, why is last night's podcast only 51 minutes long? Well, if I knew the answer to that, last night's podcast wouldn't be 51 minutes long, but I did let Ben know, and he's going to rebuild it and repost it. I checked, I don't know, I think there may have been, you know, in the processing or something may have gone sideways, but everything appears to be solid. On this, I think the rendering, something went sideways in the rendering. But Ben Birch is aware, and he is efforting a response, as they used to say in, what would we call that, Reagan speak. Efforting a response. To effort. Because it's a verb. I efforted to mow the grass. I think it comes, never mind. It's either participial or or it comes with an infinitive, often a split one. Anyway, this here is Titanic Tuesday. You will recall that Titanic Tuesday is so named after comments occurring on the program run by the "and it ain't on the air anymore," much to our, well, it was tough on the comedy budget to have him go away. But there was a 962nd tier right wing POS blather state over in Beckley, who used to say really, really fun things, like talking about how the New River runs south, and one day, as our buddy Jim pointed out to us, one day, one of the knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing hair-fisted regressives who listened to his program called in and said, "Why is it you reckon there's like clam shells embedded in the rocks at West Virginia? We ain't nowhere near the ocean." You know, six-day creation, young earther type, you know. Right. To which, in his stentorian voice, the 962nd tier right-wing talker said, "Caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates." No word yet on the movement of the Titanic candelabrum. Yep. So that's where that comes from. Titanic Tuesday, a celebration of the Titanic intellect running full steam ahead each and every day, but we celebrate it on Tuesdays. Running full steam ahead toward yonder iceberg. Thank you, Terrace, for helping along in the fundraising this evening. We're down to $135 to go. That's how we do it, just one foot in front of the other. Thank you very, very, very kindly. But we do. We celebrate the Titanic intellect of the right wing on Tuesdays, and I think I've got a lovely example. You may recall that after Elizabeth Warren handed him his rear end in the Massachusetts senatorial campaign a couple of years ago, Scott, is this yours? Scott Brown decamped Massachusetts and hied himself northerly to New Hampshire, where he wanted folks there in New Hampshire to know that, why, yes, he had had a dalliance with being a senator from Massachusetts, but it was New Hampshire really that had his heart. Kind of reminds me of that ad about the ad with the lady in the pink shirt and the pearls and the white couch that Carol told us about last night, talking about how she felt like she'd been betrayed by Barack Obama. What about this clown? But anyway, so Scott Brown is running for Senate against Gene Shaheen in New Hampshire. And he's running as a moderate Republican, which is kind of like having a slight case of the clap, moderate Republican. And he is a part of that ongoing current theme of be afraid of everything, America. We are a coward nation, COWERED, just sitting around in a puddle of our own piss, continuing to wet ourselves because them Islamic ISIL headloppers could come boiling over the border just any minute and just start lopping heads for all they's worth. Hence this here campaign ad. Oh, dear. This is a real Lulu.
Anyone who turns on the TV these days knows we face challenges to our way of life. Radical Islamic terrorists are threatening to cause the collapse of our country. President Obama and Senator Shaheen seem confused about the nature of the threat. Not me. I want to secure the border, keep out the people who would do us harm, and restore America's leadership in the world. I'm Scott Brown, and I approve this message because protecting the homeland is the first step to making America strong again.
Okay, grammar moment again. Protecting the homeland. Please, pretty please. Scott Brown, any politician, quit using that word, the homeland. Might as well call it the parent land. The homeland. What happened to our country? What happened to the republic? See, you can't use something, words like that, and you can't use our and country because it's not their country right now, those Republicans, because they want to take their country back. Oh, that would just, that'd gag a half-starved vulture. It would. He said, anyone who turns on the TV. Well, maybe there's the beginning of your problem, Scott. Now, this, of course, is running on the TV. But apparently he wants to go down to Washington, D.C. and be pals with Senator Lindsey Graham Cracker. You remember Lindsey Graham Cracker said, ISIS is going to come over here and get us all killed. All us. Us all. 330 million people going to be taken down by, at best, 35,000 people carrying black flags with Arabic white script on it that we couldn't possibly recognize. They're here. They're there. They're everywhere. Radical Islamic terrorists are threatening to cause the collapse of our country. Shh, Scott. Secret. We got ourselves into a war back in 2003 that very nearly collapsed our military. Al-Qaeda deliberately goaded us into that war, and we happened to have a president who had been installed by the Supreme Court of the United States who took the bait. Saw that little wiggling worm, and am I going to gobble me a worm? What's this hook in my mouth? Wait, where am I going? And that's what drug us into the, yeah. So I don't know. Is it a philosophical discussion? Radical Islamic terrorists are threatening to cause the collapse of our country. Well, the only way they can do that is if we get suckered into another ground war in Asia. What did Vizzini say in The Princess Bride? You've fallen into one of the oldest traps known to history. The first rule is never get in a ground war in Asia. Hello? Yeah. And, of course, as Carl told me in an off-air chat last night, all the TV shows were all about, ooh, we're bombing in Syria. Oh, my goodness gracious, we are bombing in Syria. We're droning Syria. And we've got a new kind of drone. It's, what's it called? I want to say Reavers, but I know it's not Reavers because we were talking about Reavers vis-a-vis the science fiction program Firefly last night, Diane and I. But it's something that starts with an R that sounds horrifying. And naturally, as the case will be with the for-profit media, we completely blew off 310,000 people marching through the streets of Manhattan. No time for that. The New York Times reporting Targets included weapons supplies, depots, barracks, and buildings the militants used for command and control. Tomahawk cruise missiles were fired from United States Navy ships in the region. Wonder how much that cost. Wonder how much on a cents per person basis the money we spent overnight could have gone toward maybe making sure that no American child goes to sleep hungry. Or that maybe some bridge won't collapse. Yeah, Carol pointing out those right-wingers want their country back. I want to see the deed. Well, they don't have one of those, Carol. God give it to them. I'm trying to see. I can't find the name of the new drone on the fly, but it begins with an R, and it's something horrifying like the Reaper. Thank you, Bill. Bill in Montana. The Reaper. It's a Mr. Death. He's come about the reaping. Yeah, Randy pointing out it's a Reaper. Nice. Jack in Shreveport pointing out, the usage of the term homeland was bad as soon as I first heard it used. But the thing is, it hasn't gotten any easier to hear now years later. How the can people even use the term? You know, I don't hear, that's the thing, Jack. I don't hear anybody use the term who isn't some sort of governmental spokes type. Even the pants piddlers around here who are worried about getting their little hillbilly heads lopped off in the middle of the night by ISIL, they don't use the word homeland. Irish Dave pointing out, but Bob, never wage a ground war in Asia as so last year. Also, too, when the Scott Brown man says homeland, does he mean Massachusetts or New Hampshire? And what about the unsecured border there, huh? Ha, 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 ha. Can't have a bunch of Canadian ISIL fighters just billowing over the border into Vermont and New Hampshire. They go, oh, my God. Sergi pointing out, based upon my use of the phrase moderate Republican, I guess that means they're just a tad bit to the left of Mussolini, right? No, they're a tad bit to the left of Mussolini left, Sergi. Ah, okay, the Reaper is flown by Skyraper Command. Thank you, Devin. Sergi signs off. Sergi, a moderate case of the Taco Bell trot still blows the bathroom sky high. Kyle. But, you know, it makes a little bit of sense. Moderate Republicans want to support moderate Muslim resistance fighters. See how it works? Of course. So we've got that. And that's about really about all that. If you want to talk about us getting our war on in Syria? We can. It seems like most any it sucked all the oxygen out of the room and the rest of the broadcast world. Meanwhile, about the border issue, Tim writes, how is it that the Obama administration can pay to shut the border? Not saying borders, because there are no terrorists in Canada, the Millennium Plot, Ahmad Rassami, when immigration reform is not going forward. Isn't shutting the physical border a part of immigration reform? Next question. No one from the Democratic Party is equating immigration reform with securing the border. Again, just in Mexico, not Canada, as no terrorists cross from Canada into the United States. The Millennium Plot, Ahmed Rassam. You keep saying Ahmed Rassam like he meant to do something, Tim. Yeah. Well, there's an interesting article courtesy of Devin. From over at Common Dreams. Skyraper, U.S. Drones as Tools of the Patriarchy by Allison Kilkenny. Allison writes, journalist Jeremy Scahill and Glenn Greenwald posted a disturbing report at their new site, The Intercept, on Monday about the NSA's secret role in the U.S. assassination program. It's a fascinating read. And Allison Kilkenny says, I wanted to explore a very specific passage in the report, an interview with a former drone operator for the military's Joint Special Operations Command, JSOC, who also worked with the NSA. The former drone operator explains that remotely piloted Reaper and Predator vehicles are often given cute little nicknames. For example, those used in Afghanistan were called Lightning and Sky Raider. Badass! But then the source candidly reveals that there's a subset of nicknames. The Sky Raider was also referred to as Sky Raper because it killed a lot of people. Allison Kilkenny writes, badass, what? When operators were assigned to Sky Raper, he adds, it meant that somebody was going to die. It was always set to the most high-priority missions. So here we have a bunch of joystick jockeys not only responsible for killing nameless, faceless brown people thousands of miles away, but as if that wasn't enough of a violation, they decided to sprinkle a dash of rape culture onto their acts of horrific violence. Sky Raper. The name reminds me of how my hipster journalist friends refer to drones as sky death robots, or similarly creepy euphemisms, names that would never actually be used officially by military brass because they're too close to the truth. And she writes, but here's the truth, Sky Raper. Because we just can't get it through our heads that that's not a good thing. She says, Sky Raper is extremely revealing as a term because it lays bare the true nature of patriarchy and the roles of the military and rape culture within patriarchy. These three mechanisms of oppression work in tandem, each reliant on the other. The military cannot exist without rape culture and patriarchy, just as rape culture relies on the military and patriarchy to export violence all across the globe, and the patriarchy requires the military and rape culture to bolster its very existence. She concludes, noting, Sky Raper. It's sort of beautifully succinct in a really fucked up way. Yeah. With regard to Homeland, Carol points out, we never used to use the word homeland. It has a ring of evil about it. It was the sort of word Nazis or Stalin would have used as the terrible totalitarians of the previous century mobilized their people for horrific wars or heinous crimes. Wait a minute. You see, it's the wait a minute that gets you. Yeah, Russia is the motherland. Germany was the fatherland. And apparently the European household was deeply dysfunctional. Homeland. So, Titanic intellect. Scott Brown, bless his heart. God love him. He can't help it. also in the ad, and I'm not going to run the audio again. There is the claim that it's as Tim alludes as well, the notion that we've got to just gun up the border because ISIL's going to come through Mexico. I'm still trying to work out the logistics on that. You know, UPS has all those ads. Tough day at UPS, by the way. The Tree of Liberty must be refreshed from time to time with the blood of warehouse workers at UPS. Wolverines! Haley pointed that out on my Facebook page earlier today. And a reminder, let me encourage you all to run over, if you haven't already, and participate in the ongoing discussion at the Horn page, Head On Radio Network, the Head On Radio Network, the Horn. It's a page at Facebook, and I think we get a lot of good stuff posted over there, and you are more than welcome to join in. Send a membership request, and I'll clear it, or somebody else will, and you'll be into that discussion. No, it was a bad day at the UPS warehouse in Birmingham, Alabama, Stan. Because we got to have all these guns in case ISIL decides to cross the Mexican border and manages in their black jammies with their black flags with the white Arabic script on them to sneak past Fort Bliss and Fort Hood. And freedom, right? Sure, why not? No, folks went to work today in Birmingham, Alabama, over to the UPS warehouse. And apparently yesterday, a feller had been fired from the warehouse managed to kill two people and then was gunned down himself. According to Birmingham Police Chief A.C. Roper, the gunman was wearing his uniform, his UPS uniform, when he started shooting either in or near some offices inside the warehouse in an industrial area just north of the Birmingham airport. The gunman had apparently shot himself by the time officers got inside the warehouse. Birmingham Police Chief A.C. Roper said, when these people came here to work, they had no idea this would be their last day on Earth. I think the shooter was kind of planning for it to go that way. He knew it was going to be his last day on Earth, and he was, by God, going to take some folks with him. Of course, it was probably working stiffs that wound up getting dead, and, oh, never mind. Thank God for the Second Amendment. Where would we be without it? Well, at least two families would still have a loved one in it. Oh, well, let's not even fool with the story. Because after all, we're okay with that. Just sort of want to remind people, America is okay with that. We're willing to trade somebody's daddy, somebody's brother, somebody's son, who just goes to work down to the UPS warehouse in Birmingham. We're willing to trade a couple of those so that we can make sure that when the government comes to put its jack-booted boot with its jacks on our throat, we'll be able to lay there with the boot on our neck and shoot upwards with our freedom-protecting Wolverine-endorsed freedom protector. Right. Sure. Titanic intellects everywhere. And this one's a real Lulu to get your head around. Think Progress has the story. And this is also a time for me to remind you, if you get a chance, go over to Al Jazeera. I'm sure I know it's posted online by now. They did a brilliant takedown of the fraudulent, bogus, bullshit, crisis pregnancy center dodge that the Christians run, where they con terrified, shaken up, stressed out, probably newly pregnant women into their facilities and then never tell them they're not going to have an abortion, and instead try to lie to them and traumatize them into having the baby that they didn't want in the first place. As a special note, our dear friend Beth in Dallas, who has spent a career helping women get the reproductive health care that they need, is in said Al Jazeera. No, it's Vice. It's not Al Jazeera. I was about to screw up. It's Vice, I believe. Yes. She appears in the documentary segment. And it is profound. But anyway, I mentioned that because the state of Texas is, you know, hot and heavy to shut down every last women's reproductive health care clinic in that state. Part of which involves imposing thinly veiled laws disguised. I mean, they've passed laws about the size of parking lots. They've passed laws about requirements in the facilities that are not required of any other doctor's office in Texas. You know, hospital admitting privileges, yada, 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 on and on and on. One, go and find the because you'll be infuriated after you watch it. Because they stone cold bust these Christians. They stone cold bust the Christians in the business of being liars. Because they lie to the women to try to keep them right. In some instances, putting their crisis pregnancy centers right next door to the place where the woman can actually go and deal with her crisis pregnancy. Well, if you're lying for Jesus, it's not really lying now, is it? Alongside that, Carol points out, everyone should watch the documentary 12th and Delaware. Those clinics lie to women about how far along they are in the hopes that they'll wait until it's too late to get one. Precisely. Another thing they do is they sit there and say, now I need to counsel you about the fact that you're probably going to get breast cancer if you get an abortion. There's all kinds of medical literature out there says that women's what has abortions, I mean, they get the breast cancer something fierce. The boobies just fall right off in the name of Jesus. Which is absolutely untrue, and there is no credible evidence to suggest that there is a link between breast cancer and abortion. None. So yeah, Vice TV has the report, and it is brilliantly done, and they are stone cold busted. But anyway, I bring that up ancillary to the fact that in the midst of the ongoing attempt to eliminate women's access to meaningful reproductive care in the state of Texas, Rick Perry has decided to climb onto the corpse of Joan Rivers, to ride her back. We didn't talk a lot about Joan Rivers' passing. It didn't seem like something that was really going to occupy a lot of time. But apparently she may have been malpracticed upon. She was having surgery on her vocal cords and then went into cardiac arrest. She was also an octogenarian. And the older you get, the harder surgery is. Anyway, Rick Perry. why don't we just go ahead and get this out of the way? Rick Perry, and go ahead and get the duct tape and the hockey puck, because yes. Rick Perry thinks that New York doesn't maintain or regulate its clinics as well as Texas does. No, really, I can already hear the screaming. This is a state that doesn't want to regulate fertilizer factories that blow up entire towns. This is the single most environmentally toxic state in the United States. This is a state that has the highest number of uninsured American citizens of any state in the union. And that's, you know, that's not just because it's a big state. It's because the conservative freedom government down in Texas wants people to simply work until they die. You know, we got there's a lot of people in Texas, so that means that if one dies, there's somebody to step up and take that job because they're job creators. And again, they also don't like them regulations unless they're regulating a woman's access to health care for her womanly attributes. So he was yammering away Sunday evening, and then the meth kicked in. I mean, no. He was yammering away Sunday evening, and he said, clearly the will of the Texas legislature, which I agree with, that it is a state's right to put particular types of considerations into place, to put rules and regulations into place, to make the clinic be as safe as a hospital. It was interesting that when Joan Rivers and the procedure that she had done where she died, that was a clinic. It's curious thought that if they had that type of regulations in place, whether or not that individual would still be alive. I read it exactly as he said. You notice it's the state's right to put particular types of considerations into place. He has to put that out there before he said, hoping that the anti-regulation Republicans won't hear rules and regulations. The state does have the right to impose rules and regulations, and Texas generally doesn't like it. They don't like to rule or regulate the oil and gas industry. They don't like to make rules and regulations for polluters of various stripe. They don't like to rule or regulate on massive hydrocarbon swill pipelines. As noted, they don't like to regulate fertilizer factories that go boom really big. I can well imagine they don't want to regulate any chemical storage tanks. But it's states' rights if they want to regulate what kind of procedures they got in that there clinic. In case 80-something-year-old Joan Rivers wants to come in and get an abortion. Oh, I forgot one. You're right, Carol. I did forget one. It's not just that abortion causes breast cancer. It's that most women's what murder their babies go crazy. Poor old Joan Rivers, if she'd just come and got some good Texas doctrine, she'd still be among the quick and not among the dead. It's a curious thought. It is a curious thought, Rick Perry. It is a damned curious thought. Well, wait a minute. I'm not sure if it qualifies as a thought, you titanic right-wing intellect, you. It's a curious thought that if they had had that type of regulations in place, what type of regulations? What kind of forward-thinking, progressive regulations does Texas have on outpatient vocal cord surgery? Well, the nun kind. Exactly. In the name of every woman in America, Carol asks, when is Rick Perry going to stop being so preoccupied with my hoo-ha? He thinks about my hoo-ha more than I do. And that's the thing with piglickins generally. They think about hoo-has more than most women think about hoo-has. They think about penises more than most guys think about penises. Or women, or guys think about hoo-has. They think about... They think about gay sex more than probably an entire pride parade thinks about gay sex. Because they're some titanic thinking intellects is what they are. Holy man. Oh, it's going to be a fun Titanic Tuesday. It already is. Marty pointing out, so instead of going postal, we've had two incidents this year where someone went FedEx, and now this one is going UPS or going Brown. Scott Brown? What can Brown do for you? Yeah, we got us some titanic intellects. Oh, and just to follow up, just mentioned this in passing yesterday evening. The guy who scaled the fence and got into the White House because he was upset with the VA. Omar Gonzalez climbed over a fence and went all the way into the White House. He was kind of, one gets the notion he was kind of on a recon mission. Because as it turns out, when law enforcement got around to finding his car, there were 800 rounds of ammunition in it. It also turned out he had been arrested a couple of months back, had in his possession a sniper rifle and a map with a circle drawn around the White House. Now, I don't know how the Secret Service sees that kind of stuff, but over in my neck of the woods, we call those clues. Meanwhile, the House of Representatives Oversight Committee has scheduled a hearing for September the 30th. I thought they were on vacation. They have invited Secret Service Director Julia Pearson to testify on, and you can just imagine what that hearing with a bunch of right-wing repiglickins is going to be like. Director Pearson, how come he didn't get away with it? What can we do to make the President of the United States, that socialist, less secure there in our White House? Benghazi. Who ordered the stand down? The Secret Service has been having a rough time of it lately. You would almost think that some of them there aren't so interested in actually protecting the life of the President of the United States. Yesterday, President Obama said, Secret Service does a great job, and I'm grateful for the sacrifices they make on my behalf and my family's behalf. Meanwhile, over to the Onion, as noted yesterday, I reread this after the program and just kept chuckling. Following the latest security breach at the White House over the weekend, President Obama told reporters Monday that he is taking extra safety precautions by now sleeping with a Louisville Slugger under his bed. We live in a dangerous world. It's important to be prepared to protect your family, said the president, referring to the 32-ounce wooden baseball bat he recently retrieved from the White House basement. If I hear anybody trying to break in, it's a relief to know that I can just reach under the bed and give them a reason to think twice about ever coming back into my house. I know Michelle sleeps a lot more easily now that I've gotten this piece of lumber by my side. While Obama said he hopes to never use the weapon, he admitted he received a scare Sunday night when he tiptoed downstairs after hearing a noise in the Red Room and nearly took a swing at Energy Secretary Ernest Moniz. I don't know if that's satire anymore. Really, I don't. But since we do celebrate Titanic intellect here, wait a minute, this is good. Subject line to the email, District of Columbo, Michael in Madison writing, a sniper rifle on a map with the White House circled? Something tells me Lieutenant Columbo wouldn't even need to ask,
just one more thing.
Hell, the writers would have rejected the script. That's true, Michael. And you see, the writers did reject the script. Because it was all scripted.
You must understand, this was another one of those Kenyan socialist Muslim false flag operations. For only $12.95, you can buy my video over at infoplanet.gorp and see the true story.
Yep. Who remembers as a child playing one of these things is not like the other, one of these things does not belong? Oh, I just love this. Enter stage far right wing Michael Massey. That's MYCHALMYCHALMASSIE. Over at Wingnut Daily. Michael Massey is a repiglick and right wing booger eating birther deather tenther bagger bircher what a the intellect. Doors open and the bar is pretty low if you want to be a right wing intellect, by the way. Michael Massey writes, America, and there's that word again, the one from the Scott Brown commercial. America stands on the very brink of collapse, and I believe the indications are such that if she doesn't collapse in my lifetime, she will in my son's. She will what in your son's, which? Never mind. If that scares you, it should. America is in trouble such as she has never experienced in her history, and it is a trouble of our own making. I could lie to you and subscribe to falsities, such as if we get rid of Obama and replace him with a you fill in the blank, or if the Republicans gain the majority in the Senate, or if blah, blah, blah. But assuming all of those things were to happen, I remain unconvinced that they would make one bit of difference. Deep thinker. See, none of the things that you think make a difference are going to make a difference, even if you're a... None of the things that the, you know, take our country back type teabaggers and whatnot, it doesn't matter. America has lost her way. There they go again, thinking about hoo-has. Since America is female, I can't stand the possibility of the responses. America has lost her way, and accordingly, America has lost the worldwide respect she once commanded. And no group is more aware of this than ISIS. Wait, I think we're going to have to start. ISIS! Almighty ISIS! You're right. No group is more aware of this than ISIS. Our founding fathers had a reliance upon God that they neither apologized nor retreated from. Then again, if you're Thomas Jefferson or any of a handful of the other actual founders of America, they didn't retreat or apologize because they didn't much believe. Their idea of God was a sort of Aristotelian prime mover, disinterested clockmaker deity. That's why it was called deism. They would have perfectly well understood the deity that's manifested in the creed of, say, Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, the higher power. Whether we read John Adams, George Washington, or the collective works of those who fought for our independence, collective works? Commies! One cannot deny that they had a dependence upon God. Yes, one can. Because it is historically supported that they didn't. But today, the faith of our fathers is just that, the faith of our fathers. America is... This opinion piece is gender confusing. We had fathers giving birth to a she and no mothers. Don't ask hard questions like that of the patriarchy. America has turned from In God We Trust to trust in evil men. Wait a minute. I got a quarter in my pocket. Hang on. Yeah, okay. All right. Oh, that was a real mess. Can't even tell what state that is. Quarter dollar. Liberty. Sit, Liberty. Sit. Can't tell what year. In God We Trust. Yeah, still on the money. Okay, let me see if I got another one. Maybe they changed it on the penny or something. You know, they put that shield on the back of the penny there for a while. And 2013. Yeah, Liberty. E pluribus unum. Where's the In God We Trust on the penny? Oh, there it is, right above Abe Lincoln's head. I missed it. Okay, that's two coins, and that's certainly not exhaustive, but I haven't found one of the coins yet that says, trust in evil men. Evil. Wait. Evil. Nope, still on the money. And as my close friend and colleague James David Manning put it, really? Really, Michael Massey, your buddy? Oh, yeah, just get together for a little pinochle, little canasta once in a while. You remember James David Manning from the Atla World Missionary Church. He of the rectal fixation that we examined last week. Kind of gives a whole new, a whole new ambiance to the idea of name dropping. As my close friend and colleague James David Manning put it, America no longer fears God, so therefore nations no longer fear America. Aristotle rolls in his grave. ISIS and the other Muslim threats, don't worry, this has a point. ISIS and the other Muslim threats are rabid followers of a false prophet, Muhammad, and a false god, Allah. But they are zealots in their service to their pagan beliefs. They view America in light of what she supports. And let there be not one doubt that these pagans understand that the homologation of... The what? That's a $10 word. These pagans understand that the homologation of same-sex marriage, sodomy, the wholesale slaughter of 54 million unborn children, weak politically correct officials ad nauseam, are not the qualities of the enlightened. They are the traits of the damned. The damned! I think I'm going to have to read this with just keep this on. There was a time America prided herself on a belief in God. There was a time our government acted in accordance with the summum bonum of the people she was created to serve. Summum bonum. I think we turned this off for the editorial parts. Summum bonum, the highest good. He's trying to work his little Latin street cred in there. Marmalade, look here. He's using homologation and talking about summum bonums. Well, Marmalade, I apologize. I know I shouldn't talk like that in front of you. No. Today, such beliefs are scoffed at. There was a time that when America went to war, the oppressed and threatened in the world sighed a breath of relief, because they knew the God of America would vindicate them. Ask the French, Great Britain, or the other European countries to whose aid America came. But today the media controls our battles, not the generals. Weak, ineffectual leaders like Jimmy Carter, Bill Clinton, and Obama have shown our Islamic enemies that America talks but doesn't act. Globalists like George W. Bush have shown the enemy that America's borders are nothing more than lines on paper, and they openly cheer our downfall as corrupt politicians like George W. Bush, John Boehner, et al. Are eagerly willing to reward illegals with full rights and citizenship, which means whether by outright attacks or attrition, they are positioned to do untold harm to America. My little head's hurting a bit. So, let me see if I got this right. Michael Massey says that America is going to fall. America is similar to a skeletal structure waiting for a strong wind to cause it to fall. A And that strong wind may well be ISIS and or some other vulgar derivation of their genus. If, or probably more likely, when ISIS decides to make good on their promise to plant their flags on American soil, what will our so-called leadership do? Look back on the World Trade Center and Pentagon attacks of 9/11 and consider how quickly America went from waving flags to cursing and blaming and posturing for political gain. Consider how the media undermined the effort then and how they ignore the threat today. ISIS, ISIL, whatever. These people who live in Michael Massey's fetid imagination. Want to attack this is tough. I want to make sure that I've got this all the way down to the ground. According to this writer at Wingnut Daily, ISIL wants to attack Merca, which is a female. Because to gay. That's right. This guy just argued that homosexuals is why ISIL hates Merca. Struggling here. Really struggling. So if only we hated the homosexuals better, ISIL wouldn't hate us. Because they'd realize that if we're willing to brutalize our own citizens, we, by God, won't bat an eyelash about brutalizing. Wait a minute, we didn't bat an eyelash. We just unloaded a boatload of weaponry right on top of them with sky reapers and hellfire missiles and, yeah. Marty with a bit of a logical question. I'd ask, says Marty, don't these people understand that Arabic is an older language than English? Therefore, if their word for God is Allah, then perhaps Allah is the true supreme being. However, those of us who are truly knowledgeable understand that the true supreme being is the great playwright of the universe, Plainsworth. Well, Al and L isn't the great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky L or something like that in Hebrew, and he's Al in, yeah, it's the difference between yuns and y'all and yous. Tastes great, less filling. Let's have a war. And both of which words are probably considerably older than God. Ron and Raleigh with a question. Homologation? Isn't that when you have to build enough cars to race in a certain class? Well, Michael Massey may be a NASCAR fan. The Titanic intellect. Of the right wing on proud display. And Ron called my attention to one other thing that I think bears mentioning, because I'd seen it earlier in the day and it is in the stack. An AP story being variously headlined in publications across the country, U.S. Chief Justice worried about partisanship. The article is by Grant Schulte with the Associated Press. It's a story about the R in rats. Roberts. And it is datelined Lincoln, Nebraska. Grant Schulte writes, U.S. Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts expressed concern Friday about growing partisanship in the judicial confirmation process and a public perception that politics factor into the court's ruling. To which my teenage children would respond, you think? Roberts told an audience at the University of Nebraska Lincoln College of Law that the partisan atmosphere in Washington would make it unlikely for justices such as Antonin Scalia, widely viewed as a conservative. What the is widely viewed as a conservative? He says he's a conservative. He says he's a paleo-conservative. He's not widely viewed as one. He's self-identified as one. Come on, Mr. Schulte. Or Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who is seen as liberal, to win confirmation today. He pointed to the most recent U.S. Senate confirmation of Justice Elena Kagan in 2010, which fell largely on party lines. Roberts said the politics displayed through the process feeds the public's belief that the court is a political body akin to Congress and the White House, when, in fact, it is not a political body akin to the Congress and the White House. It is, by virtue of the fact that there are only 9 members of it, a far more political body than the Congress or the White House. He said, I'm worried about people having that perception because it's not an accurate one. It's not how we do our work, and it's important that we make that as clear as we can to the public. Well, you know, he lied in his confirmation hearing when he said that he was only going to call balls and strikes, so why shouldn't he lie to a bunch of, five hundred hayseeds in a room in Lincoln? The Affordable Care Act decision was nothing if not political. The Voting Rights Act decision, you couldn't get any more political than that. And, of course, the most political of all recent Supreme Court cases was Bush v. Gore. Now, we're just going to give this little old presidency to George Bush, but we're declaring here and now that this is not precedent for any other cases in which you might cite this in case there's a close race between a Democrat and a Republican, and it turns out the Democrat is winning. He said, and this is a real Lulu, I mean, it's hard not to just roll on the floor and chuckle at this, that the Founding Fathers knew what they were doing when they gave lifetime tenure to judges. And then this, and in this moment, everyone who was paying attention, I think, became an atheist. Because no lightning bolt came down and reduced John Roberts to a little greasy spot. He said, that's not the way we do business. We're not Republicans or Democrats. Only it didn't happen. If there was a God who punished people for telling great big honking lies all over the place, really, there may not have even been a greasy spot left where John Roberts was standing. Just out into the cornfield. We're not Republicans or Democrats. Bullshit, he said the Robin, and he turned and walked away, I'm telling you. How do we know this? One little example. There aren't, to the best of my knowledge, any Democratic or left-leaning, left-word, constitutional originalists. That is the sole purview. That is a corner occupied entirely by Repiglicans and birthers and deathers and tenthers and booger eaters and John Birchers and libertarians.
We have to judge cases based on the original intent of the Constitution, even though there's all kinds of evidence to suggest that that's exactly what they didn't want us doing. But it fits our political philosophy because, by God, we're Republicans.
The Affordable Care Act was decided specifically to keep the Medicaid expansion from being a nationwide thing. They reached the conclusion that you could call the individual and employer mandates taxes under the congressional power to impose taxation, but that it was not part of the necessary and proper clause. At the same time that they said, oh, hell no, we're not going to have any of that Medicaid universal single payer for poor working Americans going nationwide. Can't have that. That's a violation of the original intent of the framers. We're not political. We're not political. But I was particularly taken with the notion that the framers knew what they were doing when they gave lifetime tenure to judges, because not too awfully far away on my little list of stuff in the stack, well, why, looky there. It's the Washington Post. Who, Johnny on the spot, after we talked about this, what, a week ago? The Washington Post finally got around to noting the fact that way back last August, a lifetime tenured federal judge beat the daylights out of his wife. Washington Post did, in fact, notice it. Good for them. Good for them. The editorial board of the Washington Post opining yesterday, the Constitution says that federal judges shall hold their offices during good behavior, for life, that is, unless they committed impeachable offense, which brings us to the allegations of domestic violence against Mark E. Fuller, a U.S. District Court judge in Montgomery, Alabama. Now you have to go way, 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 way down in the editorial before you find out that he was a George W. Bush appointment from 2002. No mention in here about the fact that he presided over the ratting of Don Siegelman at the behest of his leash holder, Karl Rove. Nothing in there. The Washington Post does note, at the scene of the domestic violence complaint, police found the judge's wife, Kelly Fuller, with cuts on her mouth and forehead. She said she had accused her husband of an extramarital affair, whereupon he threw her to the ground, pulled her by the hair, kicked her, and hit her in the face. Meanwhile, the judge's story was that Ms. Fuller threw a glass at him, after which he defensively grabbed her hair and threw her off him but didn't strike her. I have a feeling this might engender, and I apologize if there was any triggering going on there, but I have a feeling this might engender a little bit of discussion. How does one defensively grab a woman's hair who has just thrown a glass at you? Because, see, you don't throw a glass. I'm not saying you can't, but if they're a foot and a half apart, there's not a lot of point in throwing a glass at somebody. What is he, Stretch freaking Armstrong, federal judge? Or did she throw the glass and then come a-running at him to claw his eyeballs out? and she was so fast that she outrun the glass that she throwed, and it wound up breaking on her and cutting her forehead and mouth. Oh, okay. Thank you, Carol. Carol noting, I think Republicans refer to that as the sometimes you have to tell the bitch twice rule. But as the Washington Post notes, he was booked on a misdemeanor battery charge. He put up $5,000 bail and then signed into a pretrial diversion program that says if he goes to 24 counseling sessions in a row, all 24 weeks, 6 months, that's 6 whole months of somebody looking at him and saying, don't whomp your spouse, Your Honor. With him sitting in the chair going, oh, by God, I hope you wind up in front of me someday. I'm going to throw that goddamn book at you, you smug prick. If he goes to 6 months worth of less than 1 hour counseling sessions and he looks at them and says, I understand I ain't supposed to hit the little woman. I ain't going to hit her no more. Well, then, like Ray Rice, he doesn't even wind up with a criminal conviction. But the Washington Post does point out that in this instance, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit has begun an investigation. And you know what can happen after that investigation? The 11th Circuit can reprimand him. It's like the 11th Circuit's going to look at him and say, you know, we're not angry, we're hurt. We're hurt. We thought you were better than this. But we're going to reprimand you. Come on, stick out your hand. Stick out your hand. This is going to hurt us worse than it hurts you. Where's that soggy linguine? Lay into him with it. Now, you going to do it anymore? Oh, no. All right, consider yourself reprimanded. Get back on the bench and start dispensing justice to people who are probably better human beings than you can ever dream of being. Now, to be fair, it is possible that the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals, which is comprised largely of a whole bunch of shit-eating Republicans in the first place, we are not political. Ha! Well, they could recommend that the Congress impeach him. Dear Congress, we investigated Mark Fuller of whomping on his wife, and we've decided y'all should impeach him. If you want to, of course, because that's your constitutional prerogative, and we're not telling you what to do, because we're the court, and we don't offer advisory opinions. But if y'all want to, you can impeach him, and it won't be no never mind to us, and we won't have our feelings hurting or nothing. But only if you want to. You know what's funny? Speaking of constitutional originalism, here's what's funny. There's nothing in the Constitution that says that the House of Representatives has to wait on the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals investigatory panel before they impeach this sorry wife beater. Now, to be fair, as the Washington Post is and notes, that both of the senators from the great state of Alabama stand, Senator Richard Shelby, who used to be a Democrat but then became a Republican, which means that you could not trust him with the carcass of a dead skunk, and Senator Beauregard Jefferson Davis III, Sessions, Senator Beauregard Jefferson Davis Sessions III, well, he who once advised when he was working in the U.S. Attorney's Office once advised a young lawyer of color to be careful how he talked around the white women folk, and once noted that he thought the Klan was kind of cool till he found out they was a bunch of dope smokers. Yeah. Shelby and Sessions each issued statements calling for Fuller to resign, to which Fuller responded that he deeply regretted this here incident, but they needed to shut the up because he wasn't going nowhere. Meanwhile, he's drawing his breath and his pay, but because of the investigation by the 11th Circuit, he can't hear cases. So, good on you. Absolutely. Good on you, Washington Post, for finally picking up this story. And finally noting that maybe, just maybe, just maybe, a lifetime tenured federal U.S. district judge who beat the bejesus out of his own wife, that maybe that case is as important as, say, you know, Ray Rice. Maybe. Well, here we are at the halfway point of the program, and we remain $135 away from our fundraising goal. Any help is much appreciated. We're running downhill toward the end of September, and there's a bunch of bills got to be paid. And when we don't reach each evening's fundraising goal, paying those bills becomes rather difficult, which makes the next month's broadcasting somewhere between difficult and impossible. So we need 13 folks at $10 apiece. Or, you know, anybody that wants to kick in $100 is eligible then for Sparky's Smoky Ghost Pepper Cheese or locally grown California Pistachio Premium. He will happily package up either one and send it to you wherever you wish it sent. And that's just a nice little way of saying thank you for being a participant in the fundraising here. All you need to do is give me your address and tell me which you prefer, the Smoky Ghost Pepper Cheese or the pistachios, and they will be winging their way toward you. And you, in the meantime, will have knocked down the fundraising goal to nothing but $35 in the next, hour and a half, which I think we have a fighting chance of making. $135 in an hour and a half is a bit taller mountain to hike. Steve writing in regarding Fat Tony Scalia. No, he's a self-described conservative. He's widely believed to be a fascist. Yes. Yes, he is. And in regard to defensive glass throwing, Steve knows, just like George Zimmerman, defensively chased Trayvon Martin. Yeah. Going back to Michael Massey, Sergi, subject line, this dude's fancy words. This dude's essay reminds me of those kids in school who don't quite grasp the subject they're writing a paper for, and then proceed to look in the dictionary for some high-dollar sentence enhancers to try and cover themselves. Signed, Sergi Sesquipedalian Loquaciousness Kyle. Yeah, it reminds me of something I saw maybe on Facebook a while back. Sometimes I like to masturbate a word into sentences whether I know the meaning of the word or not. Homologation. We are at the halfway point of the evening. Let's go forthwith to the phones. You know the number, of course, 304-574-8178, 304-574-8178. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah.
This is Alan.
Hey, what's happening, Alan?
Oh, I'm sitting here thinking about what you were saying about this Mark Fuller.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of a website called Legal Snouser?
Oh yeah, I know. Yeah, we had the legal schnauzer's lovely wife on one evening.
Oh wow, I wish I didn't miss that. Well, I was reading the article on his website one time, and it's saying that when Sagelman was Attorney General, him and Robert Vance, you remember Robert Vance, the guy got blown up by a letter bomb?
Yep.
Well, they were investigating Mark Fuller at the time, and he was a lawyer in Enterprise, Alabama, and they were thinking that he was involved in importing drugs from South America. Sound pretty far-fetched, but who knows? So I think it's kind of odd that the same man that he was investigating, that he winds up going before when he's a judge. So that was really bad on Sigelman to go before the same guy that he was investigating. I would think that's a conflict of interest, don't you?
Yeah, but he gets to make his own call on that kind of stuff, and they did everything in their power to paint the legal schnauzer as just a lunatic, and then proceeded to treat him like, well, dirt.
Yeah, they put him in jail because he was investigating the son of the governor, and he was saying things on his website. I mean, you're supposed to be able to say anything on your website, don't you, without going to jail?
Well, anytime the government tries to impose a prior restraint on expression, the case law says that they better have a damned good reason to do it, otherwise known as a compelling state interest.
Yeah. They had a state trooper come to his house and beat him up, and then he winds up in jail, and he was in jail for a long time. I hope he's out now.
I think he is.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, did you get my audio sent you today?
Yes, I did.
Did you listen to that?
Yeah.
pretty wild, wasn't it?
It was indeed.
I've run across a lot of people like that driving around the country, and I've learned how to use a recorder on my iPhone. I think I'm going to start getting some interesting recordings.
You have to be careful about that, because you have to find out, for instance, what state you're in, how it feels. Is it a mutual consent state or a single consent state? Otherwise, you can get yourself sideways with wiretapping real fast.
Oh, really? I mean, if you're just talking to somebody.
Yeah.
That could still happen if you're just talking to somebody and
sure.
You're part of the conversation?
Sure. It depends on whether you have to have their consent or not.
Okay. I don't think it is that way in Alabama. That's where I am now. And the reason why I say that is because my father, he was a policeman for many years, and he encouraged the policeman that he was in charge of to carry a recorder with him so nobody can lie against him. Can you imagine that?
Well, I'm a firm believer, Alan, in not just dash cams, but cop cams.
Yeah.
Record
He was encouraging policemen to have recorders with them, audio recorders, just before they come up with all this modern stuff, just so they could make sure that nobody's going to lie about the police. Nowadays, it's just an awesome way, it seems like. I hate to say it, my father died a couple of months ago.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear it.
Yeah, we had a lot of disagreements about politics, but I'd like to say that part of our last three conversations we had together before he died, they were not about politics, thank goodness. He was a happy man. It's just like, he fell down some steps and hit his head against the concrete wall and knocked him right out. And so I go to the funeral, and this guy tells me that, he looks at me and tells me, well, he knows that my views about religion. So he looks at me and says, God is good always.
Oh, mercy.
That sounds kind of crazy. Sounds kind of crazy when somebody rolls down the steps and hits their head. But I was thinking in the terms, when he said, I was thinking in the terms of just accepting life like it is. That was more like the view I got from reading the book of Job. Just God is life, and just accept life as it is. I don't know what he meant by that.
Oh.
But anyway, what did you say?
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was going to say anyway, that's about all I had to say.
Well, it's good to hear from you. Are you on the road right now?
Yeah, I'm down in Montgomery, Alabama.
Oh, you're down in Mark Fuller country.
I know. I thought he was in Birmingham, but you're saying he's in Montgomery?
I think his court's in the Federal District Court in Montgomery.
Okay. Well, I think he's a dangerous man to be around.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Legal Schnauzer's post here now. Judge Mark Fuller was a crook in his professional life before becoming a thug in his personal life.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I don't know if that website is still on there. I mean, that article is still on his page about the corruption and Enterprise.
Oh, yeah,
Alabama.
It is. It is. He says we've written several dozen posts show that shouldn't, well, and, yeah, I don't think he pulled anything down.
Yeah. Well, that guy who got accused for killing Judge Vance, he might be the wrong guy. They might just got the wrong guy in there. Maybe they killed him because he was up to something that people like Vance didn't like.
Well, hard to say. And after all, it is Alabama Stan.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And he winds up with good friends with George W. Bush, and he gets a bunch of contracts with filling up military planes. So that's one of the reasons why he wound up such a wealthy man.
Nice work if you can get it.
Yeah. Or just has what to do with who he knows. He happens to know the Bush crime family.
Yeah, here we are, here we are 5 years after the last, and we're still reaping the bitter harvest of 8 years of George Bush.
Yeah. I can't remember the name of the airplane company that he had, which changed its name. And now they do fueling of military airplanes, we understand. All this is interesting to look at, but there's so much stuff to investigate this day. It's unbelievable.
Well, indeed, indeed. Alan, good to hear from you, and stay safe. And holler again soon sometime.
All right. Have a good day.
All right, you take her easy. Bye now.
Bye.
Our old buddy Alan calling in this case from Alabama. Let's take a little break here halfway through the program. Green News Report is on the way via Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. This is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn. It depends on you, and we need to raise $135. Just do. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Out there in the cold, getting lonely, getting old, can you feel me? Hey you, standing in the aisles with itchy feet and fainting smiles, can you feel me? Hey you, don't help them to bury the light. don't give in without a fight.
It's Tuesday, September 23, 2014.
Hundreds of thousands took to the streets of New York today, demonstrating for action on climate change.
Green News Report, special coverage, Climate Week 2014.
We have to do something. Today is the day.
The People's Climate March.
If we do not take action now, we will have to pay much more.
The protests on Wall Street.
You can make history, or you will be vilified by it.
And a special UN climate summit.
The alarm bells keep ringing. Our citizens keep marching. We cannot pretend we do not hear them. We have to answer the call.
All of that special coverage and more straight ahead. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
And today I call on all countries to join us. Not next year or the year after that, but right now.
Wait, to join you in bombing people or to save the planet? This all gets so confusing. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, our Nobel Peace Prize winner took time from bombing a war-ravaged country to speak to the UN later in the afternoon about climate change.
Yes, he did. And his speech followed on what was the single largest demonstration on climate change in world history.
We're near the very front of the People's Climate March, and the sign behind me reads, "Front lines of crisis, forefront of change."
When we, as activists, as people of faith who really care about this, step out and do something bold, it creates the space for others to step out and be bold.
Final estimates put the People's Climate March in New York City on Sunday at about 400,000 people, way over estimates, stretching over 25 city blocks, tens of thousands more in satellite rallies in cities all around the world, demanding bold action at the special United Nations Climate Summit in New York.
The march in New York City was amazing. They actually had to stop it 10 blocks early because it took so long for the paraders to get through. And, of course, it was covered by really almost no one, at least as far as the networks go, which is amazing to me. Can you imagine if there were that many Tea Partiers protesting against climate action? It would be wall-to-wall on every network.
Although, we should point out, NBC Nightly News was the only evening news show to cover the People's Climate March.
Amazing.
United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon himself marched with the demonstrators, saying there is no alternative to action.
There is no plan B, because we do not have a plan B.
Next, on Monday, reminiscent of Occupy Wall Street, about 100 people were arrested in New York's financial district at a massive sit-in. Over 1,000 people showed up to the Flood Wall Street demonstration. One organizer said on Twitter, the People's Climate March was about solutions, but Flood Wall Street was, quote, pointed at who is at fault for blocking climate action. That would be Wall Street
and the fossil fuel industry profiteers. Period. They are the ones blocking everything.
Monday also saw the launch of the 6th annual Climate Week in New York City, an international nonprofit event focused on sustainability. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry opened up Climate Week with new commitments from the U.S. to assist developing nations, including a new World Bank program to create a methane emissions trading market to attract private investment.
It doesn't cost more to deal with climate change. It costs more to ignore it and to put our head in the sand and continue down this road of obfuscation and avoidance.
All of these events were timed to pressure world leaders at the special UN climate summit on Tuesday, pushing government and business leaders to mobilize the political will to prepare for final UN climate treaty negotiations in Paris in 2015. At the UN climate summit, President Obama pushed for all nations to work together to meet the challenge.
We are the first generation to feel the impact of climate change and the last generation that can do something about it.
Obama announced new executive orders requiring the U.S. government to factor in climate impacts when making new international development decisions.
Tyranny.
He also pointedly called out China to step up alongside the U.S. as the world's two biggest emitters, saying all nations must work together on this challenge.
We can only succeed in combating climate change if we are joined in this effort by every nation, developed and developing alike. Nobody gets a pass.
And at least from what we heard at the UN summit, it seems like China doesn't want a pass. They seem to be interested in playing along, despite what the Republicans in this country like to pretend.
Yeah, and it's not only China that is stepping up. It's major international organizations and big corporations like Apple and IKEA and Mars and the heirs of the Rockefeller Family Foundation, whose billion-dollar fortune was built on Standard Oil.
Yeah, that's amazing.
They announced they are divesting from fossil fuels entirely.
When the Rockefellers are running from oil, you know the world is changing. Getting worried, fossil fuel industry? Good. For much more on Climate Week and all of the coverage out there, because it wasn't on the networks, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, download our reports anytime via TuneIn, Stitcher, or iTunes, and find us and follow us on the Facebook and the Twitters at Green News Report. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Yeah, that's the Bowie song with the line toward the beginning of the, where he says, "And these children that you spit on." Oh, hey, look. Climate denialists. Right. This is The Horn. It is Titanic Tuesday, the 23rd of September, 2014, about 13 minutes before the hour, and we will go straight away to the phone. Hey, welcome to the program.
You're talking to me, huh?
What's happening, Bill?
Well, if you do your hustle buck, if you do a hustle buck, if you believe a word she said, you're really off your nut. Yeah, how are you?
Ah, I'm better now. Love that.
A musical interlude there, Bob.
Absolutely.
You guys had me going. The cool old man played football, didn't he?
Yeah.
He was quarterback for Seattle, was it?
Yeah, and played at Boston College. I think that's where they met.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, man, because, well, they got rid of her on The View in a hurry because she was, her view was slightly off base, off balance.
Well, her view was a lot ignorant, and I think I think it was mutual. Her departure, because she got tired of having her ass handed to her by Whoopi.
Yeah, well, she was getting it every. I mean, I didn't see much of it. What was her name? Had an 11 o'clock in the morning show 20 years ago. David Letterman, and that was it was a funny show for 11 o'clock in the morning. For instance, he had an amusement park known as Gangland, and for a roller coaster, it had a train of cars that were like car trunks. That's where you sat. Pretty heavy Gangland. Okay, yes, I've got a situation going here with that. The Ohio Republicans put through a medical situation, you know, and it's like wandering through the back alleys. I mean, you never know where you're going to turn up at. It's really not nowhere near as helpful as it used to be, because I don't know. They have these little things you got to run through, you know, but So, anyway, getting back to this Middle Eastern thing, do you think this thing's for is a stage show or what?
Oh, no. I think it's deadly serious. And we run a real risk of, you know, as opposed to Scott Brown saying, oh, ISIS is going to collapse America, and Lindsey Graham saying, they're going to get everybody killed. I think that, you know, we have a real, real good shot here of just pumping our feet full of our own bullets.
It looks like Sunni and Shiite again. If you scratch deep enough, that's where a lot of the problem is over there.
Tastes great. Less filling.
Yeah. Well, because we went through this in the Christian world of the Reformation.
Sure.
You know, it was, everybody was there. People were chopping at each other. Germans, Lutherans versus Catholics.
Yeah, okay.
So
look at it this way. Islam is 1,400 years old.
Yep.
How are the Christians behaving in 1400 A.D.? Oh, wait, they were at each other's throats.
Yep.
And everybody else's, too.
And, Bob, that went all the way through to the 1940s, you know.
Oh, well, there's that, too.
And I can remember ads in a men's magazine. They were selling a 25 caliber Beretta Lynx handgun. It was, they started talking about how, in the ad, it said this gun was famous during the Trieste shootings. There was a big argument between the Italians and the Yugoslavians over that city after the war. You never hear much about it. And the one, Alan Dulles also, Dulles was active, he arranged the final surrender of the German army in Italy during the Second World War. His name pops up, Alan Dulles. And the Dulles brothers were everywhere you looked.
A finger in every pot.
Yeah, and getting rich quick. Well, anyway, I won't keep you because you had a good bunch of callers last night. That was a great segment. And I'd like to talk about Kansas, you know, of course. The guy whose body lies moldering in a grave, he was active in Kansas, was he not? John Brown?
Yes.
Yeah, he killed his share. And the one caller talked about the border ruffians. Bob, I saw, there was a cartoon I saw. Because a cartoon, a political cartoon has been a part of our history for, you know, forever. We always had, and here's a couple of guys from the South with hair down to their shoulders and bowie knives in their mouth, and it was came out of a New England newspaper, you know, because they were painting a picture of the border ruffians and the Kansas Nebraska bill. I'd like to hear the professor explain that one of these days, because I can't remember what it entailed, but it all came down to one thing, Bob. It was always about, not always, but a big part of it was about slavery. And what kind of Christian nation, quote, or any kind of religious nation, allows one man to own another one? It's like, are you kidding me? It really,
lots of Christian nations. Because, remember, you know, the New Testament and the Old alike sanction slavery.
The Muslims have had their turn at, it was amazing. A friend of mine lives in a neighborhood where there was a lot of Middle Eastern immigrants. Halloween, I was out there handing out candy, and these guys would come up with their family. You know, good-looking kids, nice-looking family. And I would say, you got a beautiful family. And these guys would grin, and they were obviously Middle Easterners. And I'm sure a lot of them were of the Muslim faith. But man, oh man, when you talk about how good their family looked, man, they might as well have been from anywhere, you know? Because these are the human characteristics that we share. Man, oh man, if we ever could get to a point where we could really do it, Bob. Somebody, one of the callers says, I know he's talking about me saying that I jump in fast when I'm talking with you. That's a situation I've had for years, Bob, is that my mind turns quickly. And
yeah.
Sometimes it turns so quickly it's known to go off the track occasionally. But anyway, I'll let you go.
All right, Bill. Well, you have yourself a good evening, and hopefully we will talk again soon.
Yes, sir. Goodbye.
All right. Bye now. Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, calling from Cleveland. Remember, we got one line we operate here with, so when one call hangs up, that's your opportunity if you want to get into the conversation to chime right in, 304-574-8178. A little background based on what Bill mentioned, Diane noting, at the age of 55, John Brown moved with his sons to the Kansas Territory. In response to the sacking of Lawrence, Kansas, John Brown led a small band of men to Pottawatomie Creek on May 24, 1856. The men dragged five unarmed men and boys believed to be slavery proponents from their homes and murdered them. Afterwards, Brown raided Missouri, freeing 11 slaves and killing the slave owner. Yeah, John Brown caused a lot of consternation with the abolitionists back east. Some said, well, hell yeah, whatever's necessary. Others said, it was a little harder to sanction the murders. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
Hey, Larry, what's happening?
Not too much. I'm resting my back.
Good.
My spondees are sponding. So I'm resting.
I hate it when the spondees start sponding and your Knutin valve knutinates and the flagellate doesn't drop.
So it started about 3 years ago and I could live with it. But now it's starting to get, at this point it's starting to get worse. So I don't know what's happening. I'm going to talk to the doctor, and see what he can suggest. I know about the climate change march, and I know that Amy did a program on Sunday, Amy Goodman, I know that. And she had all these interviews and people, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and Sting and all these people. It's very interesting because, there's a contradiction and, I accept it, when Sting says that he's all for doing things about the climate, but then he says, I don't want my kids to have to inherit any of the money that I've made. They should know how to go out and earn their own living, and everything. So, maybe I'm not understanding something there, and something is not quite right.
No, if he's sincere in saying that, what he's saying is he does not believe in the concept of inheritance, and of course, inheritance especially where vast amounts of wealth are concerned, inheritance is a welfare program,
mm-hmm.
by which we allow the rich to evade their responsibility to support the social cultural body of which they're a part by letting them. Well, I think we should heavily tax inheritances like we used to.
Yeah, I think so, too. But you see, in my situation, I don't know. I guess in my situation, it's a little bit different, but maybe not. I don't know. But I'm a bit confused these days. I'm feeling awfully clingy. I'm sorry, Bob. I'm just like clinging for everything I can cling to, and it's not healthy. But in any case, I heard what Obama said, and I heard what Kerry said. What I typed in the chat room that I'd like to say is, it feels right now that these politicians are like preachers. I mean, they know how to say anything to anybody. And they'll pacify one group, and then they'll pacify another group, and nothing seems to get done because they're trying to triangulate, or they're trying to work within, they're trying to please too many people, or they're trying to, get along with too many people. That's the problem that I have. The right wing has a problem with Obama because they think they hate him and they think he's trying to do too much. And the left, we on the left are upset with Obama because we don't think that he stood up for us and said to the Republicans, hey, look, folks, regardless of whatever your rules say in the Congress or however, you know, whatever the rules of decorum are for trying to deal with things in a moderate, you know, sort of I guess in a tactful and diplomatic way, we've placed ourselves in a position in this country where we've, you know, used diplomacy and tact to put ourselves in a place where we've gone too far, and I need to stand up and say, look, we are going to do these things, and I don't care if I'm unpopular with a certain segment of the population for you know, saying that we need to do certain policies, you know, like Roosevelt did, or like Henry Wallace may have done if he'd been president, perhaps, or any of those people, and would have said, look, there are certain things that we need to do. We need a healthcare plan. We need to invest money from the bottom up rather than the top down. And I don't care, you know, care what the Republicans think. This is what I think is best for the country at this time. And if I have to lose my damn presidency over it, so be it. You know, and they don't do this sort of thing.
They wouldn't. You know, I don't think they could get away with impeachment on anything. You know, they're having a hissy over the fact that he uses executive orders, you know, like white presidents did. But more than that, I mean, there are things he can do via executive order. But the nature of the system design of this government is that it really does require congressional participation. And the Congress is simply not going to participate. Now, the one thing that could probably make the biggest difference of all, if in fact, and it would take something approaching divine intervention, so you know where that leaves me as far as the odds are concerned.
Yeah, divine intervention is not going
to
happen.
To flip the Congress, if we could get a straight-up Democratic Congress, then some steps might be taken. But the larger issue, Larry, is the beholdenness and the fossil fuel industries, whether it be coal, oil, or gas, are very good at this. They hedge bets. It's not like they don't buy off Democratic politicians, too.
That's exactly right.
And remember, when he was running for president the first time, Barack Obama was swanning around places like Southern Illinois. Well, hell, he was doing it when he was running for Senate from Illinois, saying, I want Southern Illinois to be the Saudi Arabia of coal. And he went to Ohio and West Virginia and on his campaign trail, and he said, I want West Virginia to be the Saudi Arabia of coal. The man is into hydrocarbons. That's what is so manifestly infuriating, Larry, about where I live and what I had. You can't turn on the TV around here without Evan Jenkins or Shelley Moore Capito or Looney Mooney or one of these booger-eating repiglickens. Well, that Barack Obama's got a war on coal. My God, if they gave him an opportunity, Barack Obama would put coal on his cornflakes. He is a hydrocarbon fan.
Well, Bob, I don't want to play on your frustration or play on your anger. You understand what I'm saying? But when I heard you mentioning that Elizabeth Warren, you know, somebody that Beau went and talked to Elizabeth Warren, and Elizabeth Warren said, thank you very much. I care very much about what's going on in West Virginia, and I care very much about mountaintop removal, but why don't you do congressional courtesy or whatever it is? Does she get it or, you know?
Well, I mean, but let's not lay that all on Elizabeth Warren's doorstep. We've gotten that speech in a lot of places. Okay.
Well,
and if you're talking to a new office, the first thing they say is, well, have you run this past Senator Manchin and Senator Rockefeller?
Yes.
And you look at them and go, well, no, because it's not going to do any good.
Yeah, well.
And then you have to deliver the history lesson about the number of times that members of Congress acting outside a region. I mean, really? Really? He was a senator from Mississippi at the time. Did people who were opposed to slavery go and ask Jefferson Davis's opinion of abolition?
Yes, You try to, or what you do is you say, yes, we've written letters. We've written very nicely proportioned and tactful and diplomatic and polite letters to these people. And this is, and you fax them the letters and you say, yes, we have contacted Senator Rockefeller.
Oh, and we've done that. We've done that, Larry. We have absolutely done that. We've said, yes, we've talked to them about it. But the fact of the matter is, our voices compared to the voices of the coal industry are whispers, and they're screaming.
And my Native American studies teacher here in Berkeley, who is a Green Band Cherokee, who's part, you know, Native American, and I'm part Native American, part hillbilly, and she did her PhD on Appalachia. I don't know what it was titled, but she said, you know, really the people in Appalachia, they always get shit upon. Well, she didn't say that, but essentially she said the Appalachia, you know, it was kind of a resignation kind of a thing, because she did her PhD thesis on the Appalachian folks. And she just said, Basically that they're always ignored. Well, you know, how long are people going to have to be ignored before?
I don't know the answer to that, Larry. Honest to God, I don't. If past is prologue, as Shakespeare said, the odds ain't good. But that doesn't mean you quit trying. If past is prologue, the odds of the United States doing anything about climate change are awful, but that doesn't mean you quit trying.
So my father was saying, you know, there's an old Jewish proverb which I think you would understand. It said, "Neither is it my responsibility to finish the job, but I also cannot lay down the tools. So I may not be able to see whatever it is that I want to see happen." But that doesn't mean that I don't try to do something about it to the extent that I can.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is.
So that's, you know, so in any case, I'm trying to do what I can. I complain a lot. As you hear, I get angry a lot. I throw up my hands a lot. But, you know. And right now I'm downright confused, but feeling frustrated. I don't know what people do in that case. I don't think that there's a man with a beard down, you know, who's up there, you know, who's going to be guiding it's going to take care of everything for me. But you know something, anyway, it seems like sometimes people, If they don't fight, well, okay. I have to learn the proper proportion of, you know, I need to learn how to understand the balance between self-interest, protecting whatever I think my self-interest is, with being able to not be so selfish. And being able to allow to give to other people. I need to learn how to find that cooperative balance between how do I, you know, put myself in someone else's place, and how do I be giving and be warm and be kind and generous and not be expecting the world out of other people, but also be able to get my own needs met. You know, that's the balance that I have to face. So, I hate it when I've talked to my friends, talked to a friend of mine with a disability today who said she's frustrated with the disability community because there's nothing we really can do. We're trying our best, and all that. So it's not like people are sitting down, but it gets frustrating to keep on banging your head against a wall all the time and not getting, I'm sorry. I'm not working on all cylinders right now.
You're doing fine. And the key, the key to what you describe, Larry, is that you're conscious. Consciousness and being aware is the first step to anything. If you were feeling these things and you were totally clueless about them, it would be much more worrisome. You're okay. You really, really are okay, Larry.
I mean,
I know that sounds platitudinous coming from me, but as long as there's consciousness, then there's an ability to work. And as long as there's an ability to work, there's the possibility of solving the problems.
All right, so there is a way of giving to other people and giving of yourself to a way where you're not like you'll say sometimes, I'm not putting myself up on a cross, but there is a way to be like they say, give without expectation, and be self-sacrificing, but also be able to be self-sacrificing in a way that doesn't, and then if I feel that I'm sacrificing to the point where I can't, get what I need, I don't have to go and get angry at somebody because they're not responding, but I can just say, look, I really need for you to reciprocate on some level, and, I'm not gonna lay a guilt trip on you if you can't give money. Like, you never lay a guilt trip on people when you ask people for money for the program, even though you need money for the program. And you always you never do that. But so I need to know how to,
you're not nearly as incomprehensible as you think you are, Larry. Believe me. Please believe me. And it is
okay,
good talking
so not,
to you. You have a good evening, and don't eat your own liver. Okay? That's just good advice.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, take care, Larry. Bye. Our buddy Larry calling from Berkeley. Line's open, 304-574-8178. If you want to get involved in the program. Yeah, Larry mentioned it, so I will too. So far, Glenn and Terrace don't have any company in the fundraising efforts for the evening. We're still at $135 trying to raise that so that we don't have a $285 hole tomorrow for the plate passing on prayer meeting Wednesday. So, anybody that wants to jump on over to the PayPal button, and it all counts, it all matters, it all goes forward, and there are bills that are waiting to be paid. Traditional mail address is fine too if you want to use that. What else? And that's the curse of only one phone line. You don't know. There was something that I've got out there. Oh, for heaven's sake, stop. Okay, I won't go there yet. Let's go to the phone. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob.
Hey, Will. How are you?
Good. Busy. Had two interviews today, essentially temp work, working on things, and, of course, paying attention to what's going on in the news. I can understand a lot of Larry's frustration, as campaign finance is one of our big issues. As long as big money gets thrown in, there will be people who will be tempted by it and, unfortunately, corrupted by it. But there are efforts. I think Lawrence Lessig's Mayday PAC is a good idea, and there is at least more of a focus. But in the end, I'm afraid we're going to have to try to counter financial power with people power. And we've seen some good demonstrations of it. I wasn't at the climate march in New York City, but I was able to watch some of the live coverage via Democracy Now. And we had people from all sorts of areas of the country addressing issues. There was a woman with a Quaker group who was there to protest Bank PNC for its involvement in the coal industry. Why? Because she said, we are seeing people hurt abroad and at home. Abroad, the coal that produces those awful images in China is mined in Appalachia, where people are becoming sick and dying because of mountaintop removal. And unfortunately, most of the mainstream media gave scant coverage to 400,000 people marching. But it is at least a beginning. We, even though, as you said, there's reason for pessimism, I think there's also reason for hope, because if we don't believe in our own power to change things...
There has to be. There has to be. You've got to have something, Will, that drives you forward.
Exactly. I mean, consider this. You mentioned John Brown, whom I'm familiar with as a student of history, although I will defer to Dr. Bill O'Brien on matters historical, and do try to catch his program. And it's one of many fine programs on the Horn, which you can support, including this show and the Rick Smith show. So if you are so moved to help, please do so, because Bob does not have a sugar daddy funding him like the Koch brothers, who are already reacting to the president's climate speech.
Yeah, I don't think George Soros is even getting my postcards, Will.
Yeah, well, I understand that one of the great problems with progressives is we have yet to unify as a single movement, yet in the past we have.
Oh, don't get me started.
Oh, don't. Oh, I don't want to. It's just that... I work according to a rule you have stated, that the injury to one is the injury to all. And we need to learn this. And perhaps when we do, we will wake up and find out we are strong, because we already see the Koch brothers and their ilk desperately afraid. As for the matter in Syria, I figured this was coming, because unfortunately there seem to be a few options available to trying to stop ISIS. Diplomacy probably doesn't work, particularly when the Qataris and the Saudis have many of their leading citizens funding ISIS or ISIL, and I understand ISIL's the better translation. I know Iran is also eager to stop ISIL simply because of their fear of having a neighboring state dominated by Salafists, which are essentially Wahhabis, who are kind of the Islamic equivalent of Puritans. Although I
or the Klan, you know. I mean, remember, the Klan are Christians.
Yes, and they both share a belief, ISIL and the Klan, that they alone know the true way. And I have known Muslims, Christians, and Jews, some there who are, yes, believe in science and the Big Bang and everything else, who would argue that there are many paths to the truth and realization. Fact is perhaps one thing, but we all have our own journeys to trying to understand the world that we are in. And my most fundamental criticism of a group such as ISIL and the Klan is they are presumptuous. They presume that they alone have the truth, the only truth that applies. And I am very pessimistic about the likelihood that these bombings will do much, because until the Iraqi armed forces can actually do something and prove at least as effective as the Kurdish Peshmerga, we are not going to see much of an improvement in the situation. But again, this takes us back to a movie reference, and that you might remember from 1984, the movie War Games with Matthew Broderick and Ali Sheedy.
Shall we play a game?
Yes. And for those, and since it's a 30-year-old movie, I guess I don't need to say spoiler alert. When the computer starts going through every possible nuclear war scenario, it concludes to its creator, "An interesting game, Professor Falcon. The only way to win is not to play. Ding, ding." See, this simple movie.
Well, there's a reason that there's a reason that that movie came out in 1984. Will.
Yes.
We were trying to get the attention of a greasy-headed old, probably already in the throes of Alzheimer's disease president, that getting a good hot war going with the Soviets might not be a good idea. I mean, remember, this is the same president who glibly joked into a hot...
in 5 minutes.
Yeah, and you know what? They heard that across the pond over in Mother Russia, and were ready to get serious in a hurry.
Right, and and there is an incident, and I forget the details. There was an alert that came up to the Soviet forces in Eastern Europe, and a general decided, okay, are the Americans going actually unleashing this? I'm going to call Moscow for supervision. The general in question was later given a medal by the Soviet Union for not
starting World War III.
Starting World War III based on some sort of technical glitch. And I think that the essential problem we are seeing in Syria and Iraq is we should never have gone into Iraq in the first place. And this is why elections have consequences, and who is appointed to the Supreme Court have consequences. The respect for the Supreme Court that now exists is nowhere near the level it was circa 1999. Many people see it as a politicized institution, and Think Progress is already running an article on several of the things the court will rule on. And I hate to say it, when your hopes for a sane ruling depend on who can persuade Anthony Kennedy, your hopes are not good. And heaven forbid Obama try appointing another Supreme Court justice. Ruth Bader Ginsburg has said she doesn't think Obama could get someone like her passed through the Senate these days.
I agree with her. And the problem here, Will, is not just the intransigence of the Republicans. I don't know if he could get a Ruth Bader Ginsburg past the Democrats.
No, because here's the problem.
I mean, you've got my senator, Will, Joe Manchin, who stopped the nominee to head the Civil Rights Division because the man had the unmitigated gall as a lawyer to argue a jury instruction case for Mumia.
Right, and this is part of the problem. We have a Democratic Party that in most other parliamentary democracies, and most, by the way, are parliamentary, and yeah, they can have their own set of problems, but they tend to have more parties. Our Democratic Party now runs the gamut from Elizabeth Warren to Joe Manchin. That is a huge range.
That's a mighty big tent.
That tent, that's more like a Roman amphitheater. So I think one of the key problems for Democrats will be trying to change the party from within. In some places, it's going to be very hard. In fact, Bob, this is going to sound harsh. It may take the last coal companies leaving West Virginia to really think, shake things up politically in your state.
Oh, by then, no, no.
Am I being too pessimistic?
No, you're not being too pessimistic. By then, the frackers will have consolidated their power. It's just going to be a handoff.
Ah, all right.
No, political change in this state is going to have to come from within, and it's not going to change because the bottom falls out from under the people who are already bought. It's going to be an act of will. And yes. I don't know what the answer is to getting people pissed off enough to see the parlor game in which they are engaged. Because, like I've said before, the political advertising for this season is absolutely sickening.
Yeah.
And the example I've cited is that my incumbent congressman, Nick Joe Ray Hall, who is a Democrat and has been in the House for 38 years and therefore has considerable sway, even in a minority position. You cannot ignore that kind of tenure.
Correct.
And so he puts out an ad that says, "Hi, I'm Nick Ray Hall. I love me some coal. I even jumped out of an airplane. I love coal so much. I love coal. I love you." And his opponent, a nasty little critter named Evan Jenkins, puts out an ad and says, "No, he don't. Nick Ray Hall don't love coal. Nick Ray Hall don't love you. I, Evan Jenkins, I love coal. I love you. And besides, that Ray Hall, he likes that Negro in the White House."
Yep.
Just to give you an example. I was just playing there. Those ads I haven't run. But if Evan Jenkins could.
No,
good,
but
would.
I think those are the subliminal messages.
So I made the long walk to the mailbox this morning, and I pulled out an 8.5 by 11 cardboard. Hear it? 8.5 by 11 cardboard mailer. I love it. Nonprofit org, U.S. postage paid, permit 126, Charleston, West Virginia. From the West Virginia Republican Party. The idea that the West Virginia Republican Party is a nonprofit is hilarious. And what is it? So there's a picture of Nick Ray Hall, who is buried in $20 bills and weasels. No, really, weasels. And it says, "Nick Ray Hall gave the Wall Street weasels a $700 billion bailout. What did West Virginia get?" As if a Republican wouldn't have voted for the bailout. "Nick Ray Hall used our money to bail out Wall Street and stuck West Virginians with the bill."
Who was present when Wall Street was bailed out? I seem to recall it's a certain draft dodger who was in a champagne unit in Alabama whose presence in the unit could never be proved in the matter of being AWOL. George W. Bush.
Yeah, that's our boy.
Yeah, so I mean, literally the ads are bad. Here in the greater Chicagoland, we're seeing a lot of political ads, but they are not that bad, and we do see people rising up. Bruce Rauner, the Republican running for Illinois governor, seems to be pulling a Mitt Romney in, losing as much of a lead as possible by trying to be all things to everyone and offering no ideas. So, but in some states, trying to get a moderate elected, and by moderate, I mean moderate on the absolute scale, is next to impossible, and you would no more have a Bernie Sanders being able to be elected in Utah, West Virginia, or Arizona than I would have the chance to juggle planets.
Yeah, and that's what I'm getting at, or what I was getting at earlier when I said it's going to have to be a sea change in a place like West Virginia, because somewhere down the road, there's a possibility we could elect a Bernie Sanders or an Elizabeth Warren. This is not a, I mean, this is a state that voted overwhelmingly time after time for FDR. Okay?
Right.
This is a state that gave John Kennedy the push that he needed to secure the Democratic nomination in 1960.
Right.
We didn't hesitate a nickel's worth with LBJ. You know, and everything changes in 2000 when Charlton Heston comes to the Beckley National Guard Armory and says, tell Al Gore to get his filthy hands off our guns. We can do this, but on the one hand, people have to be, if a state like West Virginia is ever to have progressive representation, there are some basic requirements. And they're requirements for anybody who wants to run a campaign, really, anywhere. But the requirements are as follows. They gotta have a ton of money, Will. Because politics requires a ton of money. And there's no sense in presuming that we're gonna overturn Citizens United anytime in the near future.
No, I like to say that there are some days when I view addressing Citizens United and other campaign finance reform as something like what are the people working for civil rights in the 1940s and 50s were doing. They knew that they were not likely to see anything immediate. They could just hope that they could plant seeds, water it, and pray that something would grow. And until that changes, it's going to be often be a matter of how much money, and I don't know what will spur change. Sometimes Republicans do themselves in. That seems to be happening in Kansas based on reading one of Thomas Frank's pieces in
Diane from Kansas stand noted last night, Kansas has just gone crazier than a sprayed roach. I mean, I thought I was going to fall out of my chair last night when she was talking about Kris Kobach, Secretary of State, wanting to create a two-tiered system of suffrage.
Yep. Well, here's the thing. A lot of the elites, and I will use this term, backed by the Koch brothers and their ilk, are now saying, well, democracy is perhaps a bit too broad. We've seen that with Elizabeth Hasselbeck on Fox News calling for voting tests. We've even seen George Will arguing, saying, well, we have too many uneducated voters in the rolls who come out the more frequent elections are. I mean, in some ways, Bob, I find this refreshing. That they are finally going the Paul Weyrich route and saying, voting, we can only win as fewer people vote. And I will not be surprised if, in the next 4 years, Bob, we have some of the Fox News types and then some of their more acceptable brethren saying, well, democracy really is kind of overrated. They're kind of beginning to make that argument around the edges.
I don't know if it's so much. I don't know if that's so much around the edges, Will. I mean, when and granted, she's not exactly a mental titan, but when Fox News TV Radio Rwanda is openly arguing that there should be civic literacy tests as a condition precedent to voting, I'd say that horse is pretty well out the barn.
Yep. I mean, yeah, at least it's out the barn, and when others picking up, I mean, we do have a lot of struggles, but I have to believe that we can overcome this because I have already seen impossible things in my own lifetime. When I was 18, I thought about the time when War Games came out. I thought the likeliest outcome for our civilization was death by nuclear fire. But we have seen that end to a large degree. We have seen the Berlin Wall fall, and we have seen many other changes. We have to be open in our hearts to the possibilities of change, even if all we can do now is the quote Larry mentioned earlier. We are not, it is not up to us to complete the work, but neither are we allowed to abate it. This is why organizations like the AIC Act, and I believe there should be a vote next congressional session. Hopefully there will if the GOP does not completely dominate the House on addressing these issues. But sometimes what you have to do is plant seeds, water them, try to make them grow, and realize sometimes you may not see the trees that will bloom from them, but have faith that something will grow. And it's hard, and it's frustrating. I mean, consider this. The women's suffrage movement began in the 1850s. Not one of the women at Seneca Falls, for their first conference demanding that women have the right to vote in this country, lived to see...
ever cast a vote.
Ever cast a vote. And yet, was it not for their work that our country would not have moved forward? So I encourage hope. I encourage thinking in the long term. I also, again, encourage people to support the horn because we need outlets like this where we can have long conversations. I'm not knocking other hosts. They have different shows and different focuses. But we need a dialogue.
We absolutely do, and I value, you know, this is what I so value out of, this is what I get out of this process. I like to sit around and talk and think about these things and then go out and do things based upon the decisions and the conclusions that we make and reach. On the other hand, And I'm just going to go ahead and bring this up. This is actually a product of a conversation I was having a few nights ago. You know, there are people out there who run, and I can think of one in particular who will remain nameless, who runs an allegedly progressive radio show. And over the years, he has periodically said, well, we're going off the air. Money's not there. We're going to quit. And every time he's done that, as dumb an idea as it seems, he's come back and raised even more money. To the point that this guy is now reporting that he's on, you know, 20 low-power FM stations or something. Now, in my opinion, that program is absolutely unlistenable. But that's neither here nor there. We've never done that, Will.
No.
We have never said, you know, hey, and by the way, thanks going out to Sal. Sal's there evening in and evening out. We got $130 to raise this evening. And I've never said, okay, you know, we've gone 2 days. We're in this big a hole. Screw it. I'll be back when the hole's filled in. Because that's hostage taking.
Right.
And I have no tolerance for it. But the other side of that is, you know, we're not, nope, I joke about Gulfstream 5 hangers and cabana boys and masseurs and stuff, but that's not what it is.
No. It takes a lot to make something like this work. I think I've mentioned before.
It gets frustrating when I see, you know, that Terrace and Glenn and Sal, you know, get us started, and then buck us. And so, you know, we're looking tomorrow at a $280 fundraising hole.
Right, and I would urge anyone who hasn't donated before but is interested in doing so to do so. I mean, there's multiple ways. There's PayPal. There's the good old U.S. mail. And if I miss anything, let me know. But we have to realize that sometimes we have to rely on each other. And I would argue that It is a sense of community as progressives that is our greatest strength. At times I think we need to expand our progressive community from just thinking, I am a such and such an activist. And I think we'll see that happening. But I'm hoping that we can get the hole filled, and I'm hope that this dialogue can continue as it has for many years. Because I've seen people I've known in your industry who've tried to stay on the air, but the revenue wasn't there, and it was very frustrating and humbling, and I don't think I would like to see anyone I respect go through that. So hopefully people will step up tonight, and hopefully we as a people will step up. Based on what I saw of the climate march in New York, I believe that people are ready to take a stand. And if I may reference Dune, the sleeper has awakened. Perhaps this is the moment when we, the people, will realize that we are mightier and wiser than they, the corporations.
Maybe. The question on the People's Climate March, and I'm not trying to be a naysayer. I just live in reality land.
Yeah.
Now that this has been done and brilliantly done, the reference that comes to mind for me is to go back and historically find out what happened after August 1963. What happened when people left the National Mall
that
and went back into their communities?
The question. That is indeed the question. And I think it is.
Because I don't think people said, well, that was a mighty fine speech from Dr. King. I guess we can all go home and put our feet up now because justice is going to flow like a mighty river.
No, rather people went and did the work in their communities and small towns and great cities and kept the pressure up on politicians. And here's something we have to realize. Even if we like a politician or respect a politician, we need to offer both support and pressure. FDR is said to have met with a group of activists, heard their plan, and said, I agree perfectly. Now you're going to have to force me to do it.
Now make me do it. And exactly. I think that was some of the operative thinking behind the People's Climate March. Okay, President Obama, you say that you think climate change is a problem. Well, here we are, 310,000, 400,000 strong, and we're here to make you do it.
And now I think we have to, and not just with the president, but with people on a local level as well, and similarly for other important causes. And this is going to be hard work and long work, but in the end, I have faith that it can happen because it has happened before. This is one of the advantages of having a historical perspective on things. The stakes are high, perhaps no higher than any time in human history. But I believe that we can address the problems surrounding us, because in the past we have overcome impossible things. So my advice is relish the good that we have seen, but be prepared to work hard and long and realize you may not see all the results, but your efforts may contribute to one day seeing a world that is worthy of our highest hopes and aspirations.
Indeed. You put that magnificently.
And with that, I'm going to invite others to call in and, of course, to chip in. And remember, in the end, let us not forget, as Margaret Mead said, it's a small handful of people who change the world.
Indeed. And in fact, it's the only thing that ever has. Isn't that the...
That's the rest of it. And let's see what's out there. Let's see what we can do. And even if all you're doing is something in your own community, or at least raising your own voice and pressuring that senator, that congressman are doing what you can. Don't think it's insignificant. I mean, I think Dr. King would have been the first to say that the real heroes of the civil rights movement were not the people giving the speeches, was the people knocking on from door to door in the South, signing people up, getting people out of the polls, and facing down the police, the dogs, and the fire hoses.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, Will, you have yourself a good evening, and thanks for all the good thoughts.
All right, be well.
All right, take care. Bye now. Our buddy Will in Chicago. Will brings a lot of good will to his discussions, and I thank him for it, as do we all. It's about a quarter before the hour. I don't know if we're going to finish anything out conversationally this evening or if I'll just filibuster the rest of the way through. But I did want to share a piece of correspondence with you. I love to share his emails with you when we get a note in from our buddy Scott in Sweden. A couple of days ago, and I just didn't get to this last night. It was yesterday morning this came in. Scott, hey, Bob or Rebob. After listening for weeks to your ambivalence about this march and your well-known critter rights versus human rights position, and I don't see them as versus, I just think that we've got to find a way to reach people. And whereas I'm only a bus in a subway ride away from the site of the Stockholm People's Climate March, I decided to be the Horn's intrepid reporter to give you a report of whether Swedes are critter-theliacs or human. As the forecast was for rain, I put on my raincoat and my lobster boat hat. My son had his waterproof jacket. We managed to get within 500 yards of the assembly point before we were driven back and retreated under cover in a small cafe by a hellacious thunderstorm unlike any I have ever seen in Sweden. This should all be like in bold and caps and underlined. Unlike a thunderstorm unlike any I've seen in Sweden in over 30 years, and certainly far too late in the summer to be anything other than effing wrong. We waited an hour with no let-up in the rain before bailing out, or almost literally having to bail, dashing back into the subway at St. Eriksplan. We had to splash through a sheet of water coming out of the door of the electrical room and cascading down the steps like a mini waterfall. Now, just dig that image, because Scott's done a very good job of this. Remember, Sweden. A cascading waterfall of water into the subway, of rain. Luckily, Scott continues, we did get to Brommaplan, where my son Eric lives, and I catch my bus out to the islands where I live. I never heard whether there was a short in the subway electrical system, but apparently not. Evidently, the talk about retrofitting the infrastructure here to the coming climate change is not simply talk. Three inches of rain in a couple of hours at 60 degrees north latitude in September is almost unprecedented, Scott says. We were undergoing a drought until late July, when the weather switched to every other day rain for a month. The two West Coast cities of Gothenburg and Malmo each recorded several of these gully washers with flooding, as did other smaller cities along that coast. I do believe a few very hardy souls carried out the march through the lightning in sheets of rain, but I believe this incredible well off-season thunderstorm, had more to say about climate change than any placards we could have carried. As far as critter versus humans, it's an ecosystem. It's all related. It's not one or the other. If some people want to save the world for the critters while others want to save the world for ourselves, great. They ought to be natural allies. A properly educated population would know that stopping climate change benefits all critters, including human critters. It's the same fight against the same enemy, which is not each other. Signed, our buddy Scott. And I largely agree with Scott, and maybe Scott is getting, maybe I am not enunciating my position clearly enough. I'm not saying that one has to choose one or the other. I am asking the question, or making my critique, based upon what has been put forward for a generation in the way of environmentalism. And I, for instance, go back to the panel at Netroots Nation in Las Vegas some years back, in which, big green celebrities, members of what I call the eco-aristocracy, opined that there would never be a massive environmental movement like the civil rights movement. I would say that Sunday proved them wrong. But I would also note that for a very long time, it has been an esoteric argument that has been advanced mostly by white folks with a lot of privilege and a lot of insulation from reality. I do not need to point out that the Lower Ninth Ward in New Orleans was not populated by the 1%. It's poor folks that take climate change on the chin. And so what I'm arguing for in that sense is that we find a way to message on this that is going to reach people who are not going to be reached by esoteric aesthetic arguments. For instance, and I have a long history of note of this, it drives me crazy to hear so-called environmentalists whine and fuss about those damn windmills kill the little birdies. When in point of fact, house cats kill more birdies every year than the windmills do. When in fact, there aren't a hell of a lot of feral cats living around massive multi-billion gallon sludge impoundments in Appalachia, because if they get near them, they die. They get poisoned. Nothing lives around sludge impoundments, toxic waste impoundments.
Oh, but Muffy, the viewscape, and all those little piles of bat ceviche down at the bottom of the wind turbine. Whatever shall we do?
And so, yeah, Scott is right, and it should be a hand-in-glove kind of thing. It's a win-win. The critters win. The humans win. The humans are critters, by the way. Let's remember that. But it ain't. Or it doesn't seem to be to me. So, but really, for me, the story, Scott's account of the massive north of 60 degrees north latitude thunderstorm in September in Sweden, yeah, people had best pay attention. And the thing is, you've got smallish countries like the Scandinavian countries and larger European nations taking climate change seriously. But until such time as the Indias and Chinas and United States of the world and Soviet Union, I mean Russia, sorry, old habits die hard, until they take it equally seriously, it's going to be hard to do anything about this. And by the way, I'm looking forward to listening to Malloy tonight and hear his account of his trip to New York. And thanks again to Glenn. Glenn chipped in again this evening. So we're now at $120 to go to reach the evening's fundraising goal. And I'm not going to sit here and whip out the sacred prayer hanky or anything, but the fact of the matter is, when I say there are bills to pay, there really are bills to pay. Let's go to the phones. We got Devin. Hey, Devin.
Hey, how's it going, Critter?
Pretty good, Critter. You?
Wow, that is some really interesting weather for.
If Sergi just heard that, he's going, what? 3 inches of rain in a couple of hours in. God.
Yeah, he was probably watching that while it was happening. You know. But, you gotta be careful, you know, all this talk of, you know, loving critters, you know, the right will start thinking, you know, you're talking about, you know, man on dog action or something, you
know.
Well,
and you know what? Okay, that's facetious and true. But my observations are born of years of empirically collected data. We tried here in West Virginia, year in and year out, you know, we tried. And we said, but hey, you know, here's a scientific report that says the mayflies are dying. How does the coal industry with all their money respond? They put up ads, Devin, saying, well, them tree huggers care more about a fly than they do about a man's job of feeding of his family.
Yeah.
And so now the evidence has clearly changed, and we're talking, and I'm just suggesting that we make this about the right of individual human beings to go on being individual human beings. Because with the data we have here in West Virginia now, we get to look at them and say, you care more about a paycheck than you do about my kid being able to grow up healthy or even at all. And that's where we are with climate change, isn't it, Devin?
Well, yeah. You would think after Sandy and all the disaster that caused up here that, you know, people would, you know, wake up a little bit. And, you know, the super derecho, I don't have reverb, so. But you would think people would, you know, wake up and say, something's not right here. But they won't do that.
Well, okay, here's a classic case in point before we have to bail out of here. Did you see that Senator Rockefeller and Senator Casey introduced a bill to make it easier for permanently pulmonarily maimed coal workers to get black lung benefits? Did you happen to catch that?
Yeah, just in passing, but yeah.
Okay, so they introduced that bill in the Senate. Everybody said, well, that's just going to die. And that practical reality was announced because Republicans don't give a good goddamn about whether a man lives or dies. But
of course not.
Within the political dynamic of West Virginia, bless her little heart, Natalie Tennant ran right out and endorse the legislation. Now, we can't get her to endorse the AIC Act, by God, and all the innocent people being poisoned. But she did run right out and endorse this legislation, while Shelley Moore, I don't know, maybe she had to do her wig that night. But not a word was to be heard from her.
Yeah.
That's West Virginia.
Well, I guess you just have to take what you can get and keep pushing for more.
Around here, that seems to be how it goes. Hey, I got to get out of here, Devin. Let's have a longer conversation next time, all right?
All right.
All right. Take care.
Talk to you later.
Bye now. Devin calling from a little northward of our present undisclosed location. It is time to get out of here. Thank you, Chuck. No, not Chuck. Thank you, Glenn, and thank you, Sal, and thank you, Terrace, for your help in keeping this going tonight. Thank you very kindly to all of you who share your time, precious finite time, in whatever ways that you do. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. And, yes, always, 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 Gina, it is all for you. Good night, y'all.